Lipcast Slovakia, the podcast about Slovak literature in English. Welcome to Lipcast Slovakia number 7. My name is Julia Sherwood. I'm a literary translator based in London. And my guest today is Katarina Gebhardt, professor of English at Kennesaw State University in Georgia, USA. A native of Bratislava, Katarina started studying English and history at Comenius University. After receiving a scholarship to study in the US, she earned her BA in English from John Carroll University and a PhD from Ohio State University. Hi, Katarina. Welcome on the podcast. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Julia. Nice to talk to you too, and thank you for the invitation to contribute to this wonderful podcast.
Of course. Now, these podcasts have been prompted by the coronavirus pandemic, so let me start traditionally and ask how you coped with all the challenges of online teaching and homeschooling and the stress of lockdown, or the opposite, the easing of restrictions in Georgia, where you live.
Oh, I'm afraid that the South, especially, I mean, Georgia is all over the news right now. What we are worried about right now is the reopening of schools and universities that's supposed to happen in August. You may have heard that Georgia closed too late and then opened too early. So it's been spreading here. And even though I've lived in the U.S. virtually most of my adult life, and I know what the strengths and weaknesses of U.S. culture and politics are, I'm still kind of stunned at the response here. And I'm concerned about sort of the community and the state. And, you know, the U.S. ideal is self-reliance and kind of individual self-reliance, but we're showing that it can be a bit of a fiction, that we're completely interdependent. So that said, my family is just kind of staying put and hoping for the best. We are pretty lucky because we are in the suburbs. We have a lot of space and nature around us. My husband and I work from home. I'm currently trying to figure out what to do with my younger son, who is in school still, and maybe thinking about even homeschooling him. So maybe the silver lining that is that the life has slowed down a bit. I probably haven't experienced this pace since being a young person during socialism. So that's one of the positives, maybe.
Right. It's always nice to hear about the positives. To come back to the negatives, one of the areas that have been really badly hit by the pandemic is international travel. And that takes me to my next question. In your academic work, you have explored travel writing. You've published a book, The Idea of Europe in British Travel Narratives, 1789 to 1914, and several articles dealing with similar topics. Can you tell us something about the main themes that emerged from your research?
Yes, maybe just to start at the beginning, I came to the US as an international student, kind of obsessed in the 90s, obsessed with British literature. And as a teenager, I read books like Jane Eyre and Pride and Prejudice, and it was like virtual travel for me in a way, or time travel even, because of course we couldn't travel to the West much at that time. And ironically, when I ended up studying in the US, I was sort of drawn the other way, and British studies is a pretty crowded field. So I think I was looking for a kind of a point of contact with home. And when I was in graduate school, I read Bram Stoker's Dracula. And in Dracula, the Slovaks are described as more barbarian than the rest.
Really?
Made me pause and wonder, where did that come from? And actually, Bram Stoker never traveled to Eastern Europe or Central Europe. So he got his ideas from travel books. So when I traced those sources and analyzed them, I realized that British travelers during that period sort of responded to Central and Eastern Europeans with a kind of a mixture of identification and alienation, that Eastern Europeans were both fellow Europeans and kind of strange. And so then I traced these ambivalence in other sort of intersections of novels and travel books in the other chapters during different points in the 19th century. And basically Dracula is both threatening and attractive, and there's that ambivalence sort of is foundational to the British responses to continental Europe and contributes to a kind of an imaginative polarization of the continent in the course of the century. And then it turns out that the book can be read as a kind of a genealogy of Brexit, which happened 2 years after I published it. So it was kind of interesting to see those developments and seeing some of the same ambivalence in the debates over Brexit.
That's really interesting, because as I listened to you, Brexit was the first thing that sprang to mind as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in your current research, you've focused on a specific angle, British women travellers in Eastern and Central Europe. And I know that this is something that you just started on, but maybe you could say a little bit about who were these women and what countries they wrote about, and did any of them visit Slovakia as well?
Yes, so I came across, when I researched my first book, which probably looked at over 40 different travel books, I came across a group of these British women, travelers who were quite eccentric, although each in their own way. And they all traveled to Central and Eastern Europe between 1880 and 1914. And that was a time when railway networks were expanding in Eastern Europe, and also tourism was kind of emerging, organized tourism. And so the experience was still very different from what you could experience in Western Europe, where even at that time, British tourists felt that, you know, it was too crowded and there were tourists everywhere. So these women were also influenced by early feminism, especially the New Woman movement. And in Eastern Europe and Central Europe, they felt they were kind of off the beaten track, but also felt kind of safe because of that emerging infrastructure. So it's a kind of a particular moment. And I'm interested in how the combination of their gender and that kind of the location led them to kind of experiment with conventions of travel writing and push its boundaries. But I think their personal stories are fascinating in their own right, and I would like to tell them in a way that might appeal to general readers and not just academic readers, hopefully. And just for the key figures, Nina Mazzucelli, one of them, traveled to Slovakia. She wrote a book called Magyarland, and that was one of Stoker's sources too. And she wrote about, she actually was an artist too, and she sketched these enormous hats that Slovak men wore on the Tatras, you know, as a part of the folk dress. And then another one was Mini Dawi, who wrote a forgotten bestseller called A Girl in the Carpathians. And she traveled in the Eastern Carpathians, not far from Slovakia, but that's a part of Poland today. And she wore pens and smoked and kind of enjoyed providing a kind of a spectacle to the local peasants. And then there's one called Kate Marsden, who was a Victorian nurse, and she traveled on sled to Siberia to help lepers. And the last one that I actually sort of sparked the interest for the project is Mary Edith Durham, who traveled in the Balkans and became the champion of Albanians, and also the first woman vice president of the Royal Anthropological Institute. And, you know, actually in the fall, when I was traveling to London to your conference, Julia, I had a chance to look at her scrapbooks, journals, and watercolors at the Institute, and I hope to get back there to study the materials, but my archival research plans are a bit on hold right now because of the pandemic, but maybe I'll make it back at some point.
I do hope you make it back, because it sounds absolutely fascinating.
They're fun.
And now, you've been involved with English literature for most of your professional life, but more recently you've turned your attention also to Slovak literature. So was that linked to your interest in travel writing, or simply an urge to go back to your roots, or was there something quite different behind this pivot?
Yeah, I guess my interest in Slovak literature is another instance of me always seeking a point of contact with home. I was also hired as both a BritLit specialist and a world literature faculty member at my department. So in 2007, I kind of first reconnected with Slovak literature when I organized a study abroad for a small group of students from my university. And as a result of that study abroad, I also developed a course on Central European literature and translation, which was probably one of the most successful courses I've ever taught. Students really had to wrestle with the context, but they found the literature quite relevant. Actually, just recently, one of my students, who is now a high school English teacher, wrote to me and said he remembers the novels now. It was over, 10 years ago in this situation, and they remind him, maybe because of dystopian settings and authoritarianism, they remind him of what's happening in the US now, reminds him of those novels. So at that point, when I developed the course, there wasn't much available in translation. So I remember we read Martin Šimečka's The Year of the Frog and some short stories. There were older classics, but not much contemporary literature. I'd love to teach a Central European Lit course again now that more translations are available. And then in 2012, I had the opportunity to spend a year in Slovakia and conduct some research on Slovak literature. And it took me a while then to kind of orient myself and just figure out what was worth reading. I remember starting with the 10 finalists of NSF Litera, and that included a couple of novels that I ended up researching later.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick question. So your university, is it actually in Atlanta?
It's in the suburbs, in kind of north western suburb of Atlanta.
Right, right. So you now seem to be drawn to contemporary Slovak writing, whereas in the past you dealt mostly with older 19th century literature. So can you tell us which contemporary Slovak authors have drawn your attention, and what drew you to their work?
During the 2012 research trip, I ended up focusing on Veronika Šikulová's Miesta v sieti and Maroš Kraňák's Carpathia because of their focus on generational memory. I've always been a kind of an ambivalent immigrant, and as somebody who came of age during the Velvet Revolution and then left Slovakia shortly after, I suffer from nostalgia because you can never revisit, the place as it was then, even more so maybe than others. And both of these writers dealt with nostalgia in interesting ways. They also wrote in these strikingly poetic styles and used life writing conventions, which is the conventions of the memoir and travel writing as well. So that's what drew me to them. An added attraction was that Šikulová's Miesta v sieti is partially set in Bernolákovo, which was used to be called Čeklis, a village outside of Bratislava. And like Šikulová, I spent a lot of my childhood visiting my grandparents there, and it's a place I'm particularly nostalgic about. So I don't know. In the article, I kind of draw on Svetlana Boym, who was a scholar and an immigrant to the US from the former Soviet Union. And she argues that there's a distinction between restorative nostalgia, which is the bad kind that leads to the extremes of nationalism, and then reflective nostalgia, which is the good kind, which recognizes that home is not retrievable. And what interested me about Šikulová and Kraňák is that they dealt with nostalgia while actually being in the places that they associate with the past. And they both focus on regional specificity in the borderlands. For Šikulová, it's border with Hungary, and for Kraňák, it's parts of eastern Slovakia, where the Rusyn population predominates. And in these locations, the nationalism and the abstractions of nationalism sort of fall apart. And that interested me. And they complicate or kind of contradict official histories as well. And it was also just wonderful to meet both writers during that year, because you don't get that opportunity when you write on 19th century figures, so that was fun.
Must have been also interesting for them, because I guess not many people have looked at their works from that point of view, from this nostalgia aspect. Did you find their work was an example of positive or negative nostalgia?
Yes, I guess I didn't finish my thought there. I called it productive nostalgia because, I tried to capture the way they sort of counter the kind of the pernicious aspects of nostalgia. And what they do is look at past through these multiple layered perspectives that sort of precludes that kind of nostalgia. So I was trying to sort of analyze the ways that nostalgia could be maybe positive and lead to continuity into the future, and a possibility of overcoming the past and, you know, its traumas.
Yeah, that sounds like there's quite a lot of meat in it for more research.
Yes.
Now, I wonder if there are any other Slovak writers, contemporary or not, whose work you've been looking at or are planning to explore and why, and which of their works do you think might resonate with English-speaking readers and should be translated if they haven't been translated yet?
Yes, because I'm currently committed to these major academic projects, I haven't been able to do much translation, but it's something I really would like to do. And I think I would start by publishing, of course, short stories as most translators start, or maybe poems, and to kind of promote emerging new writers. Once I get to it, I wish somebody would translate Chikulova's work, because when I worked on her book, I translated long quotations for my article. And her prose is challenging, but also really rewarding to translate. It felt like, you know, a puzzle of sorts to kind of approximate the effect of the original. But the bigger issue for her work may be that it tends to be very local and has these regional frames of reference that I really love about her work. But it may be challenging for English-speaking readers, but then may some of her work may be better than other books. I'm currently kind of reading Slovak literature recreationally for fun, and right now I'm reading Sylvester Lavrik's Posledná baronka, which is historical fiction, and I think that one could be translated. I find it kind of fascinating and really well researched. And pretty much anytime I read a Slovak book now, after the fall conference, especially that you had in London, I keep asking myself if it would work in translation. I'm particularly interested by sort of women writers and expatriate writers, or writers who write about immigrant experience, partly because I can relate to them and partly because they're different from what I remember of Slovak literature from school. It's very refreshing. It's a kind of a new thing for me in Slovak literature.
So, over the past 3 decades, the situation with translations into English has improved. There are now 9 anthologies of Slovak literature, 33 collections of poetry, and 32 works of fiction available in English translation. So, I think if you did your world literature course today, you'd have a bit more of a choice. But still, Slovak literature remains largely unknown. What do you think should or could be done to remedy this?
When I was planning my course and preparing for the study abroad, and also when I was doing research and trying to write an article in English on Slovak literature, I felt that there was a need for maybe a kind of a foundational text that would map the key themes and genres and ideas. And so I for a while I had this idea, ever since I developed that course, of publishing kind of a companion introduction or guide to contemporary Slovak literature. And there's a series Cambridge Companions that I always use when I'm preparing for sort of a new assignment in teaching. So I'm thinking of something along those lines, and it would consist of chapters by specialists on these different topics, and maybe feature books that have been translated as kind of case studies, critically examine them and identify the key themes, and that way also promote translations while providing a kind of a starting point for Slavic studies scholars or non-specialists who are just interested in Slovak literature and culture. So it would be kind of a bridge between scholarly and kind of general readership. Actually, thank you for introducing me to Ivana Taranenková, Julia, who is the director of the Institute for Slovak Literature at the Slovak Academy of Sciences. The two of us have developed a tentative proposal for this kind of publication. And right now, a Canadian academic publisher is looking at it, expressed some preliminary interest. So fingers crossed. It's really tough because, like with translations of Slovak literature, the problem is a relatively small audience still. So, but if we got a major publisher that would distribute it, it could be a very helpful book in promoting Slovak literature, I think.
Well, that would be wonderful, and that is really great news, and I will certainly keep all my fingers and toes crossed.
Yes, thank you.
And I also will keep my fingers crossed for travel to become possible soon again so that you can continue your research on these women travelers, because that sounds absolutely fascinating. And good luck with homeschooling if you need to switch to that. And yes, thank you very, very much for coming on the podcast and for all the really fascinating information you had for us.
Thank you, Julia. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.